Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
Czechs have been warned to expect a further tightening of coronavirus measures. Around 13,000 health professionals are currently down with COVID-19, and confidence in the economy has dropped as the restrictions start to bite. Czechs have been warned to expect a further tightening of coronavirus measures this week if the steep increase in cases continues. In a video address released on YouTube on Sunday, the Prime Minister said the current figures were catastrophic and begged people to start taking the epidemic seriously. He said that in view of the growing number of infected elderly people and the rising death toll, it was almost certain that further measures would have to be taken soon. The government is to address the issue in a video session on Monday afternoon. The Czech Republic registered 7,301 new cases of COVID-19 on Sunday, the highest Sunday increase since the epidemic started in March. Over 158,000 people are currently fighting the infection. Over 5,300 people have been hospitalized, a 50% increase on last week, and 800 of them are in a serious condition. The number of coronavirus-related deaths in the Czech Republic has doubled in the past 2 weeks and now stands at over 2,000. The number of health workers infected with coronavirus has now reached 13,000, significantly weakening the health system, the president of the Czech Medical Chamber, Milan Kubek, told Czech Radio on Monday. Some 2,600 doctors, 6,000 nurses and 4,500 paramedics are currently fighting the infection. About 1,000 medics get sick every day, Kubek said. According to the Czech Statistics Office, there are some 50,000 physicians in the Czech Republic and over 80,000 nurses. Confidence in the Czech economy fell by 4.5 points month on month to 86.4 points after 5 months of consecutive growth, according to data released by the Czech Statistics Office. Consumer confidence took the biggest hit, falling by 11.6 points. After the spring drop, this is the second highest fall since the start of monitoring. People are worried about possible layoffs and cuts in wages due to the coronavirus restrictions. Confidence among entrepreneurs dropped by 3 points to 86.5. Primary and secondary school students are getting a week-long holiday starting Monday. The government extended the usual fall holiday by 2 days in order to create a longer break and help curb the spread of the epidemic. All schools were ordered to start operating online anyway since the decision was made because of the worsening situation. Parents have been asked not to let their children out to play together and minimize contacts with others outside the family circle. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Tuesday should be partly cloudy to overcast with rain and day temperatures between 8 and 12 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
Hi there, listener. This is Radio Prague International, and I'm Ian Willoughby. Today, the head of the Czech Medical Chamber issues a stark warning. Introduce a lockdown or the COVID-19 situation will spiral out of control. The 24th Jihlava Festival of Documentary Films offers a full program online. And later, as the US election draws near, we speak to Roger Johnson, head of Republicans overseas here in the Czech Republic. All that's coming up in today's program. Czech Republic's COVID-19 emergency is continuing to escalate with ever-rising infection and death rates. Now the head of the Czech Medical Chamber, Dr. Milan Kubek, has issued a stark warning. So many medics have tested positive for the virus in recent days that without an actual lockdown and strict adherence to measures, there is no chance of bringing the situation under control, as Brian Kennedy reports.
Over the past few weeks, the Czech Republic has seen the largest average increases in new COVID-19 cases in the whole of Europe and an alarming spike in hospitalizations and deaths. A third of the 2,200 fatalities since March were recorded in just the past week. While the government has again closed schools and non-essential businesses, such as bars and restaurants, and reimposed the mandatory wearing of face masks, even outdoors, it has stopped short of imposing a full lockdown as it did in the first wave this spring. It is high time to take that step, Dr. Milan Kubek told Czech Radio ahead of a government meeting on Monday to assess the crisis.
I feel like I'm living in a parallel world. While hospitals in places like Uherské Hradiště and Zlín are strained to breaking point, at the same time people are strolling along the riverbanks and swarming the markets to buy organic carrots. It's clear we can't control the pandemic in this way. The government has a duty to protect people's health by introducing a lockdown. It seems we don't have the mentality as in Sweden, where most measures worked voluntarily. For us, it must come through restrictions and orders.
Meanwhile, Dr. Kubek says nowhere near enough doctors working abroad can be expected to answer calls to return home to bolster the healthcare system. So far, only 25 have announced they are ready to do so, a quarter of the number of healthcare staff testing positive for COVID-19 each and every day.
A quarantined medical professional must now still work for a long time. About 1,000 of them test positive every day. The latest numbers show 2,600 doctors, 6,000 nurses, and 4,500 other professionals are infected. That's more than 13,000 in total. Unfortunately, they're not yet recovering because they're among the wave now rolling into hospitals.
Václav Horžejší, a leading immunologist and geneticist, is among those who predict thousands more deaths in the coming weeks without a lockdown. Even more damaging than missteps the government took in addressing the crisis, he told Czech television, are doctors who downplay or discount the severity of COVID-19.
Many think that the government, the health minister or the prime minister himself are to blame for the horrible situation. But I've long said that the greater blame lies with irresponsible doctors, popular in the media, who write these open letters and petitions criticizing the government for harsh measures leading to restrictions on freedoms and economic losses.
Prime Minister Andrej Babiš said on Sunday that if people do not comply with the current restrictions, the need for even stricter ones are inevitable.
That report was by Brian Kennedy, and now for something completely different.
Ještě jedna, poslední.
A dobré?
Na hovno. No, zítra poslední.
Zítra? Jako zítra počítě vyřizuješ ty, jo?
A trailer for a new shift, which is opening this year's Jihlava Festival of Documentary Films on Tuesday. Given the COVID-19 situation, the 24th Jihlava will be purely online, though the organisers have made great efforts to deliver a full programme of over 200 documentaries for a very reasonable price. I discussed this year's edition with Jihlava's founder, Marek Hovorka.
Everything will be located on the website of the festival, and there it's possible to buy an accreditation which costs 350 crowns, so something like 15 euros. And after buying the accreditation, they will have a special access to the website with films. And we will open films in the program a little bit in the similar way as we do during the festival, but just two times per day. So in the morning and in the afternoon, there will be every day around 10 or 15 films open for the public, so they can stream them, and they will be accessible for 7 days. There are a few films with some limits, for example, 500 or 1,000 streams, but there are not so many like this. So most of the films will be really accessible for 1 week.
About the films, I know you're going to say they're all very good, but what will be for you some of the highlights of this year's festival?
Actually, I think it depends on who is watching these films. For those who are beginners in documentary field, I would suggest to focus on sections like Czech Joy, which is the national competition, or Testimonies, which is the section focusing on films based on issues, topics related to politics, nature, knowledge, more topic-oriented documentary films. For those who are cinephiles or who traveling to Jihlava for years, for them we have special retrospectives or competitions like Opus Bonum or First Light for debut films. Actually, from non-competitive sections, I am very happy that we can present a section called Black Cinema Matters, because it's the retrospective of North American films directed by Afro-American directors only. Also very very new and surprising is the focus on documentary production of South Korea, which is celebrating now 100 years of national film production, because most of the film lovers know fiction films shot in South Korea. For example, Parasite, which won Oscars, and Palm d'Or in Cannes last year, but also other fiction filmmakers. But almost nobody know about documentary scene. So we decided to discover this hidden part of South Korean cinema. And it's really one of the largest retrospective of their production worldwide.
And is it the case, Marek, also that you're going to have some documentaries actually about COVID-19?
We didn't want to have a special section, but was waiting if there are films which we would be attracted by, touched, taken, and there are some really strong. I think the most known film is directed by Chinese artist and activist Ai Weiwei. It's called Coronation, and this film is shot from January to April this year in Wuhan. And he is observing how the people living in this huge city, how they are dealing with this issue. And for me, what's really touching is that we don't see people the same way we know from media, but that we really see humans. And that this humanic approach is something which is actually very new. Ai Weiwei is bringing us this human perspective, that there are millions of people going through the same experience and through the same tough time as we Europeans, for example. So it's really strong.
Marek Kavorka, head of the Jihlava Festival of Documentary Films, which begins online on Tuesday. Now, in the final part of our programme today, Roger Johnson of Republicans Overseas, Czech Republic, is my guest in this edition of One on One. Roger Johnson, who's been living for many years in Brno, is head of the Czech branch of Republicans Overseas, the international organization of the US political party. With the very closely watched 2020 elections almost upon us, I asked Johnson about the work of Republicans Overseas and how he views President Trump's chances of upsetting the polls. Our conversation followed an interview I did a week previously with Julia Bryan, the Prague-based international chair of Democrats Abroad. But before we get on to party political matters, I was curious about how Johnson had met his Czech wife.
I spent 8 years stationed as a U.S. Army officer in Germany, a couple of different tours, and I was also very fortunate. I got terrific schooling and from the U.S. Army, and one of the great schools I went to was I spent a year at the Defense Language Institute in Monterey, California, learning German, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week for an entire year. So I'm completely fluent in German, and after 12 years on active duty in the Army, I had about all the fun I could stand, decided to resign my commission and go into civilian business. And anyway, I was offered a position with a big German grocery company, a retailer, and I worked there for a couple of years. And then the Berlin Wall fell, and I was sent to East Berlin as an American to set up a joint venture with three East German companies. And in the midst of all that, so one of the toughest things I ever did, the day the money changed over in Germany from the East Mark to the West Mark, on a Monday morning, we opened one morning 330 grocery stores as West German stores, all in East Berlin. Up until Saturday, they had been East German stores and East German products, and I had to change everything out over a period from Saturday until Monday morning. and then sell with Deutschmarks. In the middle of all that, somebody invited me to a garden party. I didn't have a lot of time. I had to leave early and meet some Soviet officers who were going to buy some of the old product from us. And I was introduced to this Czech lawyer, one beautiful blonde, and the rest is history. So, and that summer, it's 1990, we were watching German TV, and my wife and I on German TV, this first news article was that Iraq has invaded Kuwait. And I said, well, that's not good. And she said, why? I said, well, you know, I'm in the Army Reserve still, and they're going to call me up. My specialty is logistics, and they're going to call me up. And a month later, sure enough, I was called back to active duty. So went through the entire first Iraq war with a tank division and got back a week before my daughter was born.
Wow. And what's your business in Brno today, Roger?
I'm retired. I support the family with different, you know, my wife has her own business, outdoor advertising, and then she's working on a property development project, and I'm helping where I can, but I'm happily retired.
And how did you become involved in Republicans overseas?
One of the jobs I had, while I was still active in the business world, was I was country director for DHL. And one of my colleagues, a country director in Poland, said, you know, you're a conservative. Why don't you get involved in conservative politics? And I said, well, how do I do that over here? He says, well, there's a Republicans Abroad organization. So I got into that and became active. That organization, which was transformed in 2013 to Republicans Overseas. And I was country director of Republicans Overseas. And then a year and a half ago, I was appointed as the vice president for Europe for Republicans Overseas.
And what are the main activities of Republicans Overseas?
Well, by the way, Julia Bryan is, I consider her a friend, and we've known each other for quite a long time.
Who I interviewed last week, who's the head of Democrats Abroad internationally.
Yeah, internationally. She's the worldwide chair. And she said, oh, the Republicans Overseas is a super PAC, and our job is just to raise money. Well, I disagree. Get out the vote and inform Americans living abroad that they can vote and how they do that. So that's a major part of what we do. And also, another thing I've been very involved in, and Republicans Overseas has been involved in, is there was a congressional act passed in 2010 called the Foreign Accounts Tax Compliance Act, FATCA. The U.S. government set up a procedure with the IRS that forced financial institutions abroad to search their database to see if any Americans are customers, any accounts there from Americans. It's quite an involved process. And anyway, one of our big axes is to attempt to have this law reviewed and canceled in Congress.
It's hard to generalize, but would you say Republicans overseas tend to be more socially conservative, as many people are in the States, many Republicans, or are they more business oriented?
Yeah, I would say conservative, business oriented. Combine those points. We're conservatives, and we support the U.S. government and support our president.
Well, you have lived, Roger, through, I guess, a lot of Republican presidents. I'm assuming from Nixon on, Ford, Reagan, the Bushes, now Trump. Which of those would you say you personally identify most with politically?
Ronald Reagan. His background was as an actor, as you probably know. He was also governor of California. And as president, I think he set a very good example on how one works with all Americans, not just conservatives. During his presidency, the Speaker of the House of Representatives was a fellow named Tip O'Neill, and they were miles apart, worlds apart in their political views. However, the two of them, Tip O'Neill and President Reagan, if there was a problem to discuss, they went into a room alone and sat down and discussed and looked for ways to find an acceptable solution for all parties. And I think that was a good lesson for Americans, even today, to see that the word compromise is not a dirty word, that we ought to be able to find a way to work together and to find a solution that's acceptable to all. But that seems to be at this point in our political history, it's difficult to do. But I still think that's the ideal of what we should be striving for.
Some Republicans, admittedly a minority, have come out against Donald Trump. Is there any debate among Republicans overseas over Trump's fitness for office?
We've had many discussions about that, especially in 2016 at the beginning of the campaign. At that time, I think there were 17 candidates. In fact, I was at several of the debates. I think there were 8 or 10 debates in 2016. And the first debate in Cleveland, Ohio, they had to have 2 different sessions for debates because they couldn't fit all 17 on the stage at the same time. Donald Trump was not my first choice. I supported several of the candidates, one after the other, and then they would drop out. And at the end of the day, Donald Trump was the only one left. And I decided, well, I think I can support him. The views that he was proposing were good. And I also thought it was appealing to me that he was not a politician, that it was a successful businessman. And I thought that was important to be able to do.
And 4 years later, how would you rate his performance?
Well, up until the COVID virus, he's done a tremendous job with the economy. Unemployment rates are at record lows for Blacks, for Hispanics, Asians. And up until early this year, the women unemployment rate was the lowest it's been since the end of the Second World War, when many women were involved in defense industries. And I would rate him very highly. And I know the Democrats have made quite a bit of wind about saying he should have handled it better, the COVID virus. But at the end of January, when President Trump implemented the travel ban from China, Joe Biden and many of the Democrats were just livid and called it xenophobic and fear-mongering. And even until in March, I believe it was, when Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, criticized extensively, said he shouldn't have put that in place and it should allow people to free travel from China. And history gets revised, and they're saying he didn't do a good job. I thought he did really well with also reacting for the lack of what we call PPE, or personal protective equipment, the gowns and masks and things, as well as ventilators. The national stockpile had been drawn down during the Obama administration and never resupplied. Also, there was extensive offshoring for medical devices and medical drugs and prescription medicines. A very high percentage of that now comes from China, and either direct the finished product or the materials to create the products. And I think that he's done a great job on moving the manufacturing of these products back to the United States. Also, they're both California and New York are very concerned about an insufficient amount of hospital beds. And without any discussion or debate about it, he moved the 2 hospital ships from the U.S. Navy, each with a 1,000 bed capacity, to New York and to California.
We could speak a lot about Trump's performance during the coronavirus crisis. From my point of view, he's been a disaster, but let's not get into that. I guess we don't have time. One thing I'm curious about is, how do you respond to the way he treats people, the way he attacks people with very personal insults? Obviously, he's kind of without a filter. He's always tweeting. Have there been things that he's done where you've said to yourself, now he's gone too far?
I have often said to myself and to also colleagues in our organization, I wish he wouldn't tweet so much.
Somebody take his phone away.
But what counts for me is the results and what he's done on the with the economy. And it's by the way, it's bouncing back now quite well. The stock market is also bouncing back. Yeah, this has been a terrible catastrophe for the entire world, also including Czech Republic and most of Europe, all of Europe. This COVID virus, I believe it's accurately described as a Chinese or Wuhan virus, and that appears to be the source of where it came from. Yeah, so I think it's important to work together on that and how we solve this, how we go forward.
Right now, it's not looking so great for Donald Trump in the polls. Be honest, how do you think it's likely to go for him on Election Day?
Well, you'll remember in 2016, all the polls said that it's going to be a Hillary Clinton victory. During that time, I was doing a project for the U.S. Army as a civilian logistician, and I was located in Germany. I was on 6 different German talk shows talking about the election. In fact, election night, I was in Hamburg on an hour and a half show with politicians, and I was wearing a red tie. And the next night I had to be in Berlin, so that day directly after the elections, and I had to leave the TV studio, and I said goodbye, and the moderator said, It's great to have you. Thanks for coming. And by the way, tomorrow in Berlin, wear a different color tie, because it will be too embarrassing, because it's sure that Trump is going to lose. And I said, well, let's wait. With the time difference, in another 3 or 4 hours, we'll know. And he said, no. Every expert and every politician in Germany says it's completely impossible for Donald Trump to win. And sure enough, he won.
Some people are saying that Donald Trump may try to hang on to power if he can, basically. If Biden doesn't win by a large margin, that he might try and put up some kind of legal obstacles or legal barriers, or take some legal steps to not go. What would you say in that case? Do you think he should go if it appears that he has really lost?
Yes, absolutely. No question. And he's also reacted to that. I believe last week he was asked, and he said, no, it will be a peaceful transition to power. It also is in a conversation that he had, he said, although with me, it wasn't a peaceful transition. From the very first day in office, the Democrats were trying every possible method to remove him. Up until today, it's still going on. It's almost 4 years, which is, I think it's sad.
And that was Roger Johnson, head of Republicans overseas here in the Czech Republic. And he was my guest in that edition of One on One. I'm afraid it's all we have time for in today's programme, but from me, Ian Willoughby, thank you very much indeed for listening to Radio Prague International, and speak to you again very soon.